Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
James Whelan here from Barclay Pearce Capital's wealth management team, joining you for a cup of hot coffee sponsored by Wakey Wakey, by Wellnex, one of the companies that we cover. General advice only in nature. You're listening to the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast. Like I said, my name is James Whelan. I'm joined by a good mate and sick as a dog over in Adelaide, but that doesn't stop the money train. It's Heath Moss from HLM Investments. How are you now?
Not too bad, mate. All things considered, just got my first batch of COVID at the start of the week. First time ever. Only took me 4 years, but yeah, hit me a little bit hard. So just getting past that, but we pushed through.
Duck and weave, mate. I'll tell you what, it's definitely, people have been getting it. I've got half my team are at home as well. We've got a really cool work from home policy. In, out, you know, commercial property is dead. I realized though that myself managing a team, there's no way that you can manage a team from home. Yep, I realize now why. Anyway, sorry, I'll introduce who I'm sitting next to here. Dr. David Allen. You know what, where'd you play? I've got you as a former open side flanker. Really?
Correct. Yep.
Nailed it. All right. He also happens to, what else do you do? He manages a few bill, I suppose, with Plato's Global Alpha Fund. Mate, your track record is something to be quite envious of. Your time in Europe was pretty significant. Do you want to go through it? Do you want me to go through it?
I can talk through it. So, like, originally I went over to the UK, actually played footy, and then after about 18 months, I injured my neck there, and it was probably a blessing in disguise, although I certainly didn't see it that way at the time. Then went to London and thought I'd do the typical Aussie rite of passage, 2 years, you know, hang out at the walkabout sort of thing. but within 2 weeks, I landed a job at JP Morgan Asset Management, which was, you know, at the time, I didn't know the difference between JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley. And it was, you know,
I used to get confused too.
Very fortuitous. That was a business that when I joined, we had 18 billion under management. And at the peak, we had 75 billion. Euros, and you know, I was mentored by some, you know, brilliant people. The CIO there, who took me under his wing, had a PhD in artificial intelligence before anyone, you know, even spoke about it. Ooh. And you know, really mentored me, and you know, so that was an incredible learning experience. 15 years over there, I was managing director in charge of research at a pretty early age there. And you know, the two funds probably most relevant to this this chat today is I was running a 130-30 fund that grew from 30 million seed to 6 billion euro over that time, generating 4% net alpha over that period. We also, during that time, you probably remember around 2012, there was a sovereign debt crisis, and people were like, right, we love that alpha stream, that consistent alpha generation, but we wanted in a way that's totally uncorrelated with markets. People were concerned about the EU disintegrating. So we I launched a market neutral fund. So no beta or directional exposure to the market. That fund did 20% return in its first year, and we won the Euro Hedger Award that year. So
all right, that's enough. Anything else?
Yeah, no, that's it. That's enough. While I was there, I also did a bit of study over there, which was an incredible experience as well. Got to play rugby at Twickenham in the varsity game against Oxford as well, which is you know, experience I won't forget anytime soon.
Not bad. I didn't go, but I'm an Oxford fan myself. I got because it's a long story about why I say I'm the coxman for the rowing. I've got an Oxford jumper that I wear. Because Pershing, so Bank of New York Mellon used to sponsor. Anyway, this is a stupid story. I'm not going to go to that. Anyway, they were sponsored. So I've got one of those classic rowing sweaters, gave the crew. It's got Oxford on the back of it. Yeah. I'm just sitting there, and people look at the size of me. And it's, I was Cox. What year? Oh, yeah, it was in 2004. But anyway, that's a hell of a track record, a great story, and a good one. And you're running the Alpha Fund now. we'll get into that in just a second.
Yeah, sure.
Because I want to get to the top of the show, because if Heath dies between now and the end, then we're going to be sat on his wrap. So get out of the way early and then you can go.
I'm hanging in there, mate.
Heath Moss, over to Heath Moss now, HLM Investments, for the market mirror.
Do you want to push the buttons, mate?
Yeah, I'll push the buttons.
Yep, professional stuff.
All right, get after it, mate. Go.
Beautiful. So we've got the SPX up there. We were together and speaking only a few days ago, so it's not really that much more to update us on. There's been a bit of a bounce in the market after a sell-off of around 3% last week. Obviously, the concerns are around rates and how many and when those cuts are going to come. Like in the US, they keep getting pushed out, and you know we're down to two cuts being factored in this year instead of three. Originally, it was around six in January. So, the concerns are around those rate cuts, and even here in Australia, some of those rate cuts have been pushed out a little bit due to better than expected economic data. But we do have CPI data out here in Australia in, I think, 1 minute, one hot minute. So I'll try and keep track of that when that comes out.
As soon as it drops out. What do you think it's going to be,
forecasts are 0.8 and 0.9 for headline and core for Q1. Yeah. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that when it drops. I've got my Twitter feed up, I should be all over it.
I reckon it's going to be unders.
It's definitely trending that way, where US is really like, they've made no progress in core CPI since the start of the year. But our momentum and our ability through the central bank is a lot better to get a handle on that.
I think it's going to be
under
as soon as it drops.
Yeah, and that monetary policy here hits the household budget a lot harder than it does in the US. So only natural we're going to have a little bit more success here. So we've seen the SPX bounce a little bit. Came off of being a bit oversold here. Whether it's sustainable or not, still not yet to be seen. We've got in the middle of Q1 earnings in the US. Tesla reported this morning, missed on both top line and bottom line results, but were 13% after hours on the back of promises of new models, AI events,
robo-taxi. Hey, do you want to shout out to Chris Weston and the stat that he said 7 days straight declines? What happens after 7 days straight?
Oh, yeah, I have to bring that set up. Hang on.
It's 7 days straight. It's happened four times in the past. The Tesla's gone down 7 days in a row. Every single time it snapped back. And now that's five times in a row.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal snap. Thank you, Weston, for that, mate. Love you, bro. Keep going, bro.
Stock's still down about 30-40% though on the year. So it is it's hard. And that's on the back of price cuts, margins pressure from China and globally, where EVs are starting to have a lot more competition. You know, a couple of years ago, it was Tesla and the rest. Now it's Tesla, BYD, LIO, NIO, you name it. There's a myriad of Chinese companies out there producing high-quality EVs that they're shipping globally now. So there's that. Pepsi also brought out their earnings. I like looking at the staples. They give an indicator of where, the consumer is at in the US mainly. And we saw volume growth still drop away in the food segment and is flat in the beverages. So maybe they're getting a hold on the volume side of things. Because we had seen previously that the volumes on Pepsi and McDonald's and all that had been falling quite sharply, but maybe they're stabilizing now and people are happier paying those higher prices.
That's right. Maybe if you actually put the charts up that you're talking about, man.
MCD. All right, give me 2 seconds. There's Tesla. Look at that. That's what are we? 300 there. That's back in July of 23. We're now about 144 for the stock now. So yeah, I'll briefly go over gold. Gold's had a phenomenal run off the last few trading days. Bit of a pareback on the back of maybe rates stabilizing. If we look at the 10-year, rates have stabilized between that 4.6 and 4.7% mark. So gold has come back. Political tensions have also eased in the Middle East. We've seen a bit of tit for tat over there. Iran fired shots. Israel retaliated, and we haven't really seen anything since. So we've seen gold come off a bit. I read a really interesting stat the other day that Costco is selling between $100 and $200 million worth of 1 ounce bars of gold per month at the moment, which is phenomenal.
It's about arbitrage.
There is, there's an arbitrage play. Their premium members get about a 2% discount on their docket. And then if they use a Citibank card, I think there's a further 3% cash back. So they're trying to buy gold at a slight discount and then sell it.
You're not running the Costco card over a plate, so you're buying the game.
Yeah, so that compares to something like China, who bought $400 million worth of gold last month. So they're doing quite a lot of volume. So that probably helped that lift in gold over the last few weeks as well. What else are we talking about? US dollar. A little bit of strength there, but it's come off again. We had overnight US S&P Global PMIs come out softer on both the manufacturing and services, as opposed to last week where we saw the ISM, where it was a little bit stronger on the services, but softer on the manufacturing. But EU PMIs came out last night, and they, particularly in Germany, they were stronger than expected on the services side. So that's encouraging. Again, we've spoken about EU and China green shoots coming through this year and towards the end of last year, and it looks to be you know, that trend, that momentum is keeping going. So last one, copper, has come off a little bit off those highs. Maybe they're saying that Chinese buyers are a little bit hesitant to pay prices up around here, around the 2-year highs at the moment. So maybe we'll see a little bit of weakness there, especially if the US dollar remains quite strong. So that's about it.
Thanks, Heath, mate. That was good. We've got a lot of talking points there, David. Do you cover any of those areas? Have you heard of the US dollar?
US dollar. Remind me. Can you just go through that one again?
Yes, it's a currency backed by the US.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. 70% of it's been printed in the last couple of years.
Yes.
What do you got?
Our view on macro is quite contrarian. If you look at there's a favorite quote that I have that making big macro and geopolitical forecasts makes for far better dinner conversation, but it doesn't make you more money.
Good point.
You know, like look at last year, we had interest rates go through the roof. Everyone knew that was going to happen. People expected growth and tech would get smashed. What happens? The Magnificent Seven collectively up 90%.
Held the entire market.
Everyone said that China would come out of the gates on fire, but a malaise slept in.
Yep.
In the US, they thought that inflation was going to remain very high for long. It came down very rapidly, and now people have been wrong-footed again. They thought it was really going to come into the target zone, and it's just flatlining at 4%. Yeah, on the geopolitical front, like, there's so much fascinating geopolitical stuff going on. I was reading a really interesting article on the history of the CIA. So CIA, they have basically unlimited resources for intelligence for making calls. But they also almost have an unlimited terrible history of making proper predictions. You look at weapons of mass destruction, where they said there were, there weren't. They were shocked when the USSR fell apart overnight. 9/11, totally flat-footed. They thought Russia would roll Ukraine in a few weeks. That hasn't turned out. The geopolitical stuff, and this isn't to be disparaging. It's tough, right? And the macro is tough as well. So our philosophy is we have big guardrails on the portfolio. So if there's a spike in inflation or contagion in US regional banks or a crash in Chinese property, any of these things that plausibly could happen, we ensure that our portfolio is not going to be unduly buffeted.
How do you? I'm going to ask how.
Yeah, so without getting too technical, we've got a proprietary software called Prism that I built at JP Morgan. We've built a much better version here at Plato. And think of it in the way that banks do stress tests on their mortgage books, right?
Yep.
We do 75 different stress tests on all our portfolios every day. So if there's a big dislocation to any one of these factors, we measure how much that will impact on the alpha we're generating in our portfolio.
The entire book will keep on tracking it.
Yeah, exactly. And whenever we see something too large, we, Russia's just invaded Ukraine. there could be a safe haven run. You know, natural gas will probably, you know, go through the roof. So we see, okay, what are our exposures? Let's put guardrails around
that. How does it input like one piece of data? Where does it pull that from? For example, the, you know, with, like you said, don't get too tech, but yep. I mean, this is a podcast for people like us, so you can be fairly technical if you want to get into it. Yeah. So what's one piece of data and how do we get input?
Like, yeah, sure.
Tanks, so, tanks outside Ukraine. So how does it?
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. Because it's varied. So say, you know, one of the big things that this year is November US election, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know how it's going to go.
Coin flip.
Yeah. Are both candidates still going to be alive and not incarcerated by then? Who knows?
Another good question.
Right. So basically what we do, we are using the betting markets where there's real money behind it. We have daily changes in the probability of a Trump or a Biden victory.
Okay.
And we correlate that with every single stock in our 10,000 stock universe. Most stocks aren't particularly sensitive, but certain stocks like green energy stocks, deep cyclical miners, very correlated with who wins there.
Yeah.
Okay. So by measuring the sensitivity of each of those 10,000 stocks in our universe and then aggregating that to portfolio level, we get a very good idea of how our portfolio is going to fare in different circumstances. So it's that same principle across 75 different stresses from Taiwan or anything that's keeping you awake at night.
Yeah, wow. Okay, that's great. What else are we going to talk about? Oh, yeah, we're talking about, sorry, yeah, the geopolitical difficulty.
So the geopolitical really, really challenging as well. So, you know, we look for different proxies for the geopolitical. And so, you know, we've got the Taiwan dollar, Taiwan stock exchange in there. Like, you know, if this crisis in the US, hopefully it's petering out. But if it was to totally get out of control, oil prices were to double, we're measuring the oil price sensitivity on the portfolio. Anything that I remember during Brexit, we were very concerned. We didn't know which way the Brexit vote would go. So we've got a basket of stocks that would be really adversely affected under if the Brexit referendum got up.
Yeah.
And then we measured how sensitive is our portfolio to that Brexit basket, if you like.
Yeah.
So we're always looking at trying to manage those different
things. Like the banks, European banks, so that those ones, basically all the entire FTSE 100 or whatever was in that basket sort of area.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That wrong footed the hell out of me, actually. Brexit, did everyone else too?
Well, I didn't know anyone in London that thought that the vote would get up because we're in this
bubble, weren't we?
But if you go up north, they didn't know anyone who was voting, you know, that wasn't in favor of Brexit, so you know. It's important. Our models actually predicted the impact on our portfolio precisely, and then we got it wrong. We lost money, but the model worked anyway.
Yeah, well, what do they say about trading? If you do the model and do all the work, then the worst part of it is just sort of the outcome. If you know what I mean? Like, as long as the process was followed.
Exactly. You didn't drift.
Yeah, don't drift in the process.
So I guess that like the key message is like macro is real and geopolitical really, really important, but it's also really challenging. It's probably the reason that 25 years ago, the biggest hedge fund segment, you know, in terms of where all the money was in global macro, George Soros and the like. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, in terms of that breakdown of where all the hedge funds are invested, the global macro slither of that pie chart is tiny. Why is it tiny? Yeah. Because it's so hard to get right. So that doesn't mean it's not important. You just need to protect against the black swans.
I think that if you've got the difference between a...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Functional quant and something that's basically just guessing really well, and I know which one I'd take.
Yeah.
If you sell it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Sure. So what else is happening out there at the moment?
Well, one thing, in our strategy, Plato Global Alpha, we've generated since launch about 20% returns net of all fees. We're beating the MSCI World by 10% per annum. And what's quite interesting is 70 to 80% of the alpha that we've generated, the outperformance we've generated, has been from the shorts.
Really?
Okay.
And yeah, I was going to go into that.
Yeah, and the shorts are only 25% of the overall exposure of the portfolio. So why is that the case?
Yeah. Well, some examples, we've got some as well.
Yeah, you bet. So if you look at the current environment, what's unusual? Well, you had rates just so ridiculously low for so long, and companies were on these ridiculous valuations. This inflated the valuations of all these garbage assets, from unprofitable tech to, you know, your NFTs. And so there's these huge valuations on companies that had never made operating cash flow. Okay, they were kept alive by the benevolence of their creditors, right?
Sort of zombie companies, like in Japan back in
the 90s.
Which there was a lot of going into. I wrote about it a few times, just how many there were.
For sure.
Which, I thought there'd be more of a calamity.
Yeah, well, Australia had one of the highest proportions of zombie companies in the world, which is remarkable. And anyway,
the lucky country.
Yeah, exactly. Bowed out again. So a lot of the short alpha has come from those companies that had very high valuation. Suddenly, they started to pay real financing costs, and the valuations have been torched. The way that we find these companies, because our universe is very broad, 10,000. Companies across 23 countries. We haven't seen anyone else do this in the world. We've fully codified a system of red flags. Okay, there's actually 150 red flags that are fully systematized. Mm-hmm. So I can pull up any stock in the world and instantly say how many red flags they have.
Whoa.
So this is something that all fundamental managers, you know, they go, I've got a red flag, I don't like this, I don't like that. Yeah. But it's very ad hoc and sort of, you know, not particularly modern approach. You know, doesn't use all the systems and data that's available to us today.
Yeah, I trust the old gut for this sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's a great quote from IBM that 90% of all of the data that's available in the world has been created in just the last 5 years. Okay, so there's this avalanche of information.
Yep.
And, you know, it's just up to us to find which information is valuable and which is not. The origin of that red flags process was we looked at, I was invested in a Spanish tech company, gone up 45-fold, okay? So we were thinking we were rock stars. And then the Spanish prime minister came out and said, this is going to be, you know, Europe's first unicorn. Second, a politician says that we should have sold.
Yep.
And what happens a couple of weeks later, it's uncovered as a huge house of cards.
Accounting fraud.
Stock price goes to zero. CEO gets indicted, goes to jail. We said, shit, you know, we don't want that to ever happen again. Let's do a post-mortem. And what we found is that the big red flag, there's really two. They were paying their auditor a tiny amount, you know, which is indicative of the revenue being fictitious.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Another red flag is if they're paying the auditor way too much, incidentally.
And they've had the auditor on for 20 years.
Well, I think Lendlease have had it on for 40 years or something like that.
I've had it on forever.
Yeah.
Another
story. So then we said, okay, let's get a tens of thousands worth of stocks worth of history and find out every time a company has an obscure auditor, do they go on to be more risky and often blow up? And sure enough, they do. So, and I guarantee the next case of a big accounting fraud, look at who the auditor was, and they're probably not going to be top four.
And I think they found that with one of those Adani companies, the short report that came out about them.
They did. They had this very juniorized auditor that just had no idea.
Look at the website. It was like one page long.
Like young kids. Well, that's a red flag in itself.
Yeah.
And FTX was another one they were using auditors that weren't top tier. And anyway, we said, okay, well, that's just one red flag. Let's build that up. So we looked at every fraud, every bankruptcy that we could get our hands on over the decades to build up this toolkit. So Enron, poster child for special purpose vehicles, related party transactions, circular money flows, the big banks during the GFC, no clawback provisions on executives. They allowed for severance vesting. We've got some great data on the history of all of the directors of companies we invest in. Have they ever been involved in misconduct in the past?
I think Hempton's got one of those.
Very similar sort of thing.
Yeah.
We're a big believer in that, you know, no matter how much information we do have, there's this huge information asymmetry. The corporates will always know far more about the company than we can ever hope to.
Mm.
So, you know, there's a great line out of, you know, I think it's like a 70s movie now, All the President's Men, and it's the undercover operative says, follow the money. You know, if you follow the money, you're going to uncover a lot of, you know, the course of misdeeds.
Do you find any correlation between insider selling?
Well,
I was going to ask, because that's been a debate about selling and not selling and how linked to it is. The bearish Twitter accounts, and they're out there, are always ones just going, insider selling is at record highs. Look at this, the market's going to come up 50%. What's your finding?
Yeah, it's a really good point. If you just apply that naively, that actually doesn't work, okay? It's a lot like most things in life. It's a lot more nuanced than that. So say, for example, a stock price is had a huge run up.
Yep.
Okay. What the evidence and research says that if directors and insiders are unloading stock there, it doesn't help you at all predict whether the next move in the stock is going to be up or down, because they're profit taking, they're taking risk off the table. It's all very logical. 80% of the time when insiders are selling, it is when the stock's at or near new highs.
Yeah.
It's rare. 20% of the time is when the stock price has been smashed and they're selling. Yeah. It's kind of like rats fleeing a sinking ship, right?
Take what you can.
Great example. Okay. Liontown. Last December, right around Christmas time.
I'm going to like this guy.
Their CEO unloaded $1 million worth of stock. Okay. You know, sneaking it out while we're all had too much turkey, perhaps. And anyway, what happens a few weeks later, they're forced to disclose that their entire financing syndicate had fallen through, okay? And stock opens on Monday down 26%, okay? You know, so, you know, nothing beats self-interest, right? So that's one of the 150. Oh, is that right? I'm quoting Labor politicians.
one of the greatest treasurers of all time.
Yeah, well, indeed.
Always back self-interest is what it is. That works every time.
Every time. Yeah. So, if a company has 8 or more of our red flags, then our research shows that over the next 12 months, on average, it'll underperform the market by 20%.
Okay.
It's a really big number.
That's great.
And so that allows us to avoid landmines on the long side.
Yeah.
But also to generate some great short alpha. So that's been the key source.
Anything that you want to be disclosing now that you sort of is popping up on the radar that you can let out of the bag?
We've been short Lendlease for some time, and that's been a really good short for us. Like you mentioned, commercial property before. People talk about stranded assets being coal mines, and maybe that's true. But stranded assets are, you know, looking around the city now, is that there's a lot of buildings that, you know, they're not going to be occupied again unless they're totally revamped or even knocked down. So, you know, commercial and office real estate is certainly not a great place to be, especially with a lot of these companies that have got a lot of debt, a lot of offshore debt. So that's been a very good short position for us.
That was funny. That was funny that you mentioned Lendlease, because I think it was a while back I was thinking that Allan Gray is a fund that I really like, that long-term investing.
Yeah, I saw you did like a podcast with them recently.
Yeah. I think that they took a position in Lendlease.
Isn't it
funny seeing both sides of the fence?
For sure. And well, there's definitely, you know, value argument. There's also a Buffett truism that the problem with turnarounds is they never turn.
Yeah,
and
they hold forever. Those guys.
Well, the thing is, like, we like stocks that have that value support, but we'll never just get in early. We'll wait until the sentiment turns and the narrative turns. And the same token, like, we were short of a name called Brainchip. They had
BRN, was it? Pull up the chart for a second.
Yeah, BRN.
They had, if you can believe it, 10,000 companies in a global investable universe. They had 22 red flags. That was the second most out of any company.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And
I remember that. That was crazy, though. That was
nuts. $2.34 there. It's now.
Yeah, the buyer at 234. Show yourself. There's always one. There's always going to be one guy out there just getting.
Yeah, there's
true story. True story. I had a client that bought this at 15 cents, right? And he wrote it all the way up to $2.34 and whatnot. I begged him to take some money off the table. He wouldn't. And now still in it. It's down at, you know, 31 and a half, and he still believes. But to this day, I still can't work out what they're trying to do.
I don't know what they do.
Yeah, I'm much the same. You know, we shorted the stock, and we're not really sure. The soundbite here is that they had a market cap of two, or was it three billion at one point, and they got less revenue than where I just picked up this miso soup.
That's good.
So it is.
That's extraordinary.
It is. And like one of the things that I think is really interesting is important is even on that chart, like at the top, they had a lot of red flags in, but we didn't touch it. We won't go short a stock that's got great sentiment, because if you don't want to stand in the way of that, if everyone there's no good being right if you're right too early. So we'll always wait till the sentiment to turn our way before we'll put a short position in.
Because, you know, I mean, it's a long way back down to zero from where it was. So you've got time. I can see where he comes in there.
There's
always going to be people out there like Heath's client who just want to cling on to that mask for dear life no matter what's going on.
Well, that's right. And at the downside, like we're out of that now. The most dangerous shorts in my experience are the ones that have made you the most money, that you love the most. They might be down 80 or 90%. But what can happen then is that stock just gets a little bit of incremental news. Like I remember when BrainChip, they just got a patent awarded, like, right, you know, and then the stock price like pops 10% on a day.
Yeah.
So when it's so beaten up like that, then, you know, the risk return is not in your favor for shorters, and we'll just move on and find something that's got more downside potential at that point.
Okay, no worries. I've just seen as well, it's just dropped. Oh my God, someone's
coming hot.
Someone's quoted Christopher Joy here. I can't believe I'm about to quote him. Oh my God, kill me! Big upside surprise on. I don't care for him that much. It's okay. Big upside surprise on Aussie inflation, as we expected. There he is. That's Chris Joy with the as you expected, with core printing at 1% in the quarter and 4% over the year, versus the inferred RBA forecasts of 0.8 and 3.8%. RBA should be lifting rates here, thanks Chris, in line with global peers. So, if they lift rates here, I have to sell some stuff, maybe a kidney.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, ultimately, we're last time I checked, we're in a per capita recession.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so if it wasn't for the influx in the population, you know, there wouldn't be nominal GDP growth, right? So I don't see that as prudent increasing rates here. Obviously, you know, if you've got certain vested interests, that would be, you know, favorable. But I don't really see that's happening from here. I think there's always going to be bumps along the way, but the trajectory is a lot more pronounced here downward than it is in the US, where I think, you know, the argument is right that rates aren't going to come tumbling down anytime soon.
The inflation figures are still coming down, they're just not coming down as quickly as they had hoped. Headlines down to 3.6% annually now, down from 4.1 last quarter. Down at 4% versus 4.2. So it is coming down. And if you look at what's pushing that, a lot of that is shelter or housing here in Australia. And unless it's a supply problem here in Australia with housing, so unless the RBA are going to drop rates or cut rates, it won't fix that supply problem here. So,
I think we've gone massive over time here.
Oh, sorry, guys.
No, that's fine. That's fine. So
just quickly, speaking of macro, the US Senate just passed that $97 billion deal for Ukraine, Israel, and Palestine, and also snuck in the divestment of TikTok in there. So it'll be interesting to see what the response is from China.
So that's for TikTok to operate in the US, they need
have to divest it. The US operations, yes.
And there's someone, this is going to be some big playing entrepreneur who's just going to pick it straight
up.
Probably an ex-senator. Pelosi on the bid, as usual, for that one. Isn't she sharp? I don't know how she gets it so right so many times. Isn't it phenomenal? Isn't it phenomenal?
Genius.
What are we doing? What are you doing with your coins? Just join the Senate.
Well, there is some quant signals that just do nothing but follow the congressional buying and selling pattern. So
it's, you can't go wrong there with it. That's the best insider selling that there possibly is, and buying as well.
Mm.
The trading of NVIDIA has been phenomenal. Actually amazing. Heath, mate, show us some footy tips. We're going to wrap it up. I'm going to get so much.
I've got one for Anzac Day tomorrow. What have I got? The Dons to beat the line at 13.5. I think it'll be a close game. Paying $1.90. But I still think Pies will win. De Goey to get the Anzac Day medal, paying $7. I like him. He seems meaningful.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll chuck a couple on for the Anzos tomorrow as well. Warriors will beat the Titans, no problem at all. And you know what? I reckon St. George are slightly less awful than the margin here. And I'm going to, 6.5 seems to work for me. I'll take St. George 6.5 to beat the Roosters on Anzac Day, because it's always a bit of a fun game of football on Anzac Day. And before that, I reckon the Wars against the Titans. You, me, and a couple of mates have beat the Titans, mate. even with your neck. We're coming off the bench. Thank you for joining us. Well, have you any tips for the weekend?
One tip. We've spoken about league, obviously, but if you're into your Union Shoot Shield for the Anzac Day match, Randwick, the Galloping Greens taking on the Beasties, Eastern Suburbs at Coogee Oval. It's going to be a big crowd. Randwick obviously won the premiership last year, but it's a fierce local rivalry. So Beasties to win by a couple.
Oh, okay, good. I'll get on to that. And look, all of that has been fantastic. You have been joined by you weren't an open side flanker, sorry. Oh, yeah, you were. The Plato's Global Alpha Fund manager, outperforming pretty much every single month, day and year. your boy Jamie sent some stats over. I looked at the performance; it's absolutely phenomenal. Get after it. One of Pinnacle's funds. So if you want to know more, either go to the Plato website or go to the Pinnacle website as well. They'll be able to help you out. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Allen.
Thank you, guys. Enjoyed it.
And you have been listening to the Theory of Thing Investment Podcast. Heath, mate, wrap it up for us. Take us home.
I've got nothing further to add. I'm going back to bed, I think. So, but thanks, David, for your insight. That was phenomenal. Getting real true insight into your fund and, you know, sort of your edge and alpha over the rest out there, and the results and your performance speak for themselves. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Heath. Hope you're on the mend, mate. Good to chat.
Thank you.
Good on you, Heath. Thank you very much, Heath. Thank you all for joining us. If you need to know anything else, then hit me up on the Clay Pierce Capital website, or I don't know, phone me. I think my phone number's all over the website. So anyway, talk to you later, guys. Have a good one.
See you later.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.